It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Brought to you in part by Trailer Sales Alabama. A great selection of high-quality trailers at great prices. Financing available. Trailer Sales Alabama on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Now, with reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast, here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on assignment this week. That's all right, because we got a lot to do on this show. I've been mentioned in for the last couple weeks. We'd start looking at the process of hunting next year. I know we're just right now in the start of our rifle seasons here for deer, and so much going on in waterfowl, but now it's time to start even looking forward to next year, if you want to go somewhere other than right here at home in Alabama. He's joined us before. He's a real treat to talk to. His name's Trail Kreitzer. He's a research manager, gear expert over at GoHunt.com. I got to tell you, the guy that pointed me in the right direction on how to start researching states to plan a Western hunt that I did last year, and he's joining us now to talk about hunting out west and hunting Alaska, too. Hey, Trail.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, man.
Appreciate you having me on again.
Hey, it's a pleasure, and it's exciting. And I want folks, you can go to GoHunt.com and check out more about what they do, and specifically Trail. And also, we'll talk about the Instagram page and all that, because people need to catch up on what you have been doing earlier this year. You went to Alaska, man. You did the dream of all North American hunters.
Yeah, and it was a dream that I'd had for, you know, ever since I was a little kid. I've always been fascinated with moose hunting, and they get, you know, no bigger than Alaska. So, yeah, I finally put together a DIY moose hunt and went up there and did it.
I can't wait to break down you breaking down a moose and the size and the weight, and we'll get to that. But that process, if somebody's listening to us right now and has that kind of dream like you had, you have, and I have, and I think a lot of us do, even though it seems for hunters here in the South, we're just kind of getting into hunting season, if they want to be going to Alaska next year, it's time to get moving.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. You know, right now they've got an application period that's going to close December 16th, and that's if you want to apply for one of the permits up there. If you're a non-resident and you're looking to apply for a permit for, you know, either, you know, Dall Sheep, those areas, or, you know, one of the limited moose areas, you know, brown bear, those kinds of things, your deadline is coming up. You know, Alaska is interesting in that they have a combination kind of draw permits and then also over-the-counter options. So a lot of those species in Alaska, you know, you're talking brown bear or grizzly bear or mountain goat, Dall sheep in some areas, you know, it's a permit. But a lot of those you have to actually have a guide to go up there and hunt as a non-resident. So yeah, I mean, we just launched Alaska, and a lot of that information is going to be broken down within our process and that insider platform and give you the information that you would need to know to whether you need to apply or if you can just do an over-the-counter hunt.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, people will go to GoHunt.com, and when they sign up for the Insider, they'll see not only the new thing here, the new gem, Alaska, but be able to research a whole bunch of other Western states. But this Alaska thing, you mentioned it. Can you give us a Cliff Notes, a Wikipedia version of this? Because I've always heard that, okay, you have to have a guide. It's like you talking about brown bear, and do you have to have – but moose, do you have to have a guide? What do you have to have a guide for? What is there no chance of going unless you have a guide?
So Rocky Mountain goat, brown bear. Let me think, what else? All right, I pause.
You mentioned dolls, and that was one of the – so goat is guided, but dolls isn't required, or –
Dolls is also, yeah. So doll sheep, Rocky Mountain goat, also brown bear, and muskox. You would probably need a guide to make that happen, and definitely, like I said, brown bear for sure. And they do that partly as a safety precaution. You know, mm-hmm. those bears are giant, and you know,
yeah,
you could
are.
Potentially put yourself in a bad situation. So those are still, you know, required to have a guide. But yeah, there's a lot of species that you could just go up and hunt on your own, whether you're talking Sitka blacktail deer or, you know, caribou or moose. There's still moose areas that you can just buy a permit and go over on a DIY unguided hunt.
Yeah, and I want to get to those. I want to delve in. The caribou and moose are the two that really keep my attention. But for someone down here who's, you know, a lot of us are not familiar with the draw system. If you're going to get a, let's say you are going after brown grizzly bear, or you're going after dalls, or you're going after goats, do you have to, I mean, you get a guide, but don't you have to, people have to understand they have to draw for, right? Don't they have to draw and then find a guide?
It depends on the species. So, okay. Like for mountain goat, like if you were going to Kodiak Island, that's a permit that you would have to book a, you know, an outfitted hunt. Same with, doll sheep. There's still over-the-counter doll sheep areas in Alaska, but you do have to have an agreement with a guide and have that in place before you go. There's some draw areas, whether you're talking to Chugach or some of the others, where you still, you know, you'd have to have a guide. I always tell people, if you're looking to go on one of those hunts, that's a guided hunt, you know, whether it's brown bear or grizzly or mountain goat or doll sheep, one of those areas, get a guide ready to go before you really start to apply and dig in and find out where you want to go. Because I think, you know, a good guide and having that all nailed down and ready to go before you apply is best practice for sure.
You know, it's and I've only fished up there, and it's been probably 5-6 years since I've been there fishing last, but it's Alaska's so big and things can happen so quickly, yeah, that I think a lot of us want a guide for many of these hunts. So the process would be go through, find a guide, obviously your species you're looking for, the kind of hunt, find the guide, and then what? If you call them, I guess they can tell you you need to draw this, that, or they can tell you what you need to try to put in for.
Yeah, I would say you could do a combination of the two. So if you are, you know, a member of the Insider platform, you can very easily use the season selector filter and find the areas that are guided, that you would have to have a guide, you know, with a permit. And then at that point, you can start looking through and finding guides and outfitters and calling those individuals and saying, you know, what do you think? What are my best chances? Where should I apply within that? And then go from there. And get that nailed down, you know, make sure that you have a guide that can take you. And then put your application in and just hope for the best.
How mobile are guides up there? You know, is it that, hey, it's Trail and Sean's guide service and we just guide this area of the Aleutian Peninsula or this area around Fairbanks? Or is it that there are outfitters and guides that you can get drawn and they know how to hunt that area? I mean, what's realistic?
Yeah, they have concessions, so they'll have an area that they hunt. You know, depending on what you're looking for, and you'll need to contact them and kind of flesh that out before you go. And there's some great guides. I mean, Alaska is, you know, when it comes to hunting, it's as good as it gets for big game. And there's a lot of good guides and outfitters up there that have been drawn to the area because they love that lifestyle. So, you know, there's some great guides and great outfitters up there, and they do cover specific areas and species typically.
You mentioned two of and what drew you to Alaska for this hunt, that moose, but you also mentioned caribou. I think those are two that a lot of hunters are attracted to. It draws me. Those two, I guess it's the antler thing that draws me, although the sheep thing draws me too, but I don't know if my knees will make it. But the moose and the caribou, those are sometimes draw, but you also you went in an OTC, right?
Yeah, just over the counter, and there's some great options when it comes to over the counter hunting for moose. And for me, I mean, what drew me was just, I think, what draws a lot of people, just the sheer adventure of Alaska. It's so wild and just so vast. If you want to feel, you know, small on the landscape, Alaska is the place to do it. And I'm always looking for that kind of adventure. And of course, you know, giant 60-inch bull moose is a big draw too.
It's unbelievable. And we'll talk about how y'all can go check out pictures of this bull moose. Well, okay, put it in this way. You were packing out, one of your packouts was the antlers. How much did the antlers weigh?
So the antlers on the bull that I killed, so the two antlers and then the skull plate between the two, we cut that out, was just shy of 60 pounds. I think it's 58 pounds.
Y'all think about that. Think about that. That is nothing but antlers as skull plate, and we're pushing 60 pounds. That is,
yep.
Puts things in perspective. And when we come back from the break, I do want to talk about the whole process there. But so if people go look, and if they go to gohunt.com and get signed up for the Insider, they will be able to see, like, okay, this is a draw unit for moose, or this is over the counter. It'll show up.
Yeah, that's that's my one of my favorite filters is that season selector filter. And if you click on that, right next to each season, it's going to indicate whether it's a general or a permit. And if you click on, you know, for example, rifle permit, if I click on that, the map's going to automatically populate and show me the units that are draw units in the state of Alaska for moose. So it's very easy to find the over-the-counter versus the draw permit.
And what's cool, too, is when y'all get there, you can find these different areas. And I don't know how y'all do it. I don't know how y'all crowdsource it, but you have a description of units and information on the units. I mean, you got a lot of lot of field work to get that done.
Yeah. And we try to source people that are, you know, familiar with those units in those areas. In fact, one of the individuals that put together a few of these unit profiles, we call them, it was the guy that I actually hunted with. He lives in Fairbanks and is a good friend of mine. His name's Steve O'Pat. And, you know, he's familiar with a bunch of that country and hunted a bunch of it. And so he's a guy that is put together some of these unit profiles for us. And it's great on-the-ground information. It's areas that he's hunted in and is intimately familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like having the way I look at it, and I've looked at it for the other western states, I said, it's like having a friend or somebody from, you know, you knew a buddy of a buddy's in every area, in every state. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, it's a great resource for sure, and it can definitely help cut down your research time.
That's for sure. Coming right back, Trail Kreitzer from GoHunt.com. I want you to check out the website, GoHunt.com, see what we're talking about. But we're going to talk about this epic moose hunt Trail did earlier in the year, and then all the other things that happened afterwards, because he's had a fantastic season so far. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along, and great to be talking to Trail Kreitzer from Go Hunt, GoHunt.com, and brand new stuff. That's, you know, that's the business thing. You always got to innovate and have new things, but my gosh, a big one this year for Go Hunt Alaska, now live on there. How long's the process of getting something like the Alaska up on the Insider? How long do you work on something like that?
I would say it's probably about a year in the works. You know, we start talking about adding new states, and, you know, we've got other states right now on the docket that we've been working on and looking at. But I would say it's typically a year, or about a year, to gather all the stats and the statistics and get everything developed, all the, you know, the tech side of it, whether it's mapping. All that takes a ton of time, and those individual unit profiles take a bunch of time to end up, you know, to have them written and put together. So, yeah, it's about a year.
What I like is you then, you know, go on the hunt in Alaska. So we're talking, not only we're talking about us getting information from GoHunt.com and the Insider about Alaska, but we're talking to a man just back not too long ago from his hunt this year in Alaska. Let's talk about that. You said moose, like so many of us, that's been a focus since you were young, and you went after it this year. Talk about your hunt. Talk about, you know, OTC unit planning. What does somebody need to know who wants to try to do what you did?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was a lifelong dream and something I always wanted to do. And as luck would have it, I ended up meeting an individual at an expo. Steve was his name, Steve O'Pat, and he's actually from Fairbanks up there in Alaska. And we just started talking about going on a moose hunt together. He had an area that he kind of thought might be interesting to hunt. He'd heard good things. And again, that was just from word of mouth and talking to people. And like I said, Steve's written a lot of our unit profiles now for Alaska that just went live. But yeah, just an over-the-counter unit. I bought my permit online, so you have to buy a hunting license in Alaska. And then I bought the harvest ticket and then a blocking tag. So I was into that about $800 for the moose license, and I think it's $160 for the hunting license. Cost, I would say, is something first and foremost that your listeners should think about when going to Alaska. So even on a DIY hunt for moose, you're going to be into that maybe, I would say, around $4,000, including flights and shipping, either it's antlers or your meat back. So that's something that you're going to have to end up looking at. for the hunt that we did, we were able to take an inflatable raft that Steve had and a 25-horsepower motor, and we air cargoed that into a little town there. And we ended up just inflating that and then went up the river and ended up hunting there off the banks of the river. Equipment's a major concern for you if you're thinking about doing an Alaska hunt. I would say one of the best things that we had going for us is we had a teepee tent with a stove. What that allowed us to do was to have a fire every night and every morning to kind of warm up. It also allowed us to dry out our clothes and our equipment every day because Alaska, you're going to be wet. It's the nature of Alaska. It just rains. You know, you're always wet, it seems like. I have a close friend. He always tells me the thing about Alaska is it's not whether you're wet or dry. It's whether you're warm or cold because you're always going to be wet. So you just want to be warm and wet. equipment, yeah. So equipment's a major concern, and then you know, finance, the cost of it, planning and prep. You're gonna need to do some planning as far as like your travel, you know, your airline, whether you're taking a puddle jumper to your destination or a boat. So that's something worth considering and thinking about. And then just, you know, be prepared for an Alaska adventure. I mean, have good equipment. You're gonna deal with some weather. You're probably gonna deal with, depending on where you go, you might deal with some brown bears, some grizzly bears. You want to kind of read up and set you up on how to deal with those. And then I would say, you know, Go Hunt Insider is a great resource for you to kind of find out some opportunities of where to go. And we're going to be rolling out a bunch of articles on, you know, how to plan a hunt, whether that's a float trip or, you know, a fly-in trip or, you know, blacktail or something of that nature. It's a planning process, but I can tell you that from having done it, like you said, I just turned 40. I wish I'd have started, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, because it's so much more doable than you might think.
Yeah, it's, and that's one of the things that people think they're out of that game. I'm not 25 anymore. Well, you can still do it. But it's different than going fishing. So, I fish up there, and I want to get into brown bear discussion as well, because that's part of it. That's what stays in a lot of people's minds. In the hunting frame, I think it's different, especially anything interior. When I've been on the coast, I've been, you know, pictures I'll put up on my Instagram page, have been around a pretty dense population of brown bears, but they were all fairly occupied with silver salmon, and we had wide open gravel banks, and, you know, we made more noise than a Mardi Gras parade if we were coming through any wooded section. But we were brown bears, but that's a different thing. When you're hunting, you're trying to be quiet, and you're sometimes not where they're occupied with salmon. That's worrisome to a lot of folks.
Sure.
And y'all, yeah, I mean, y'all had an issue, right? I mean, y'all, I see a picture of a bear rug right here.
Yeah, we, the first day up there, and I should preface it by saying Steve, being an Alaska resident, was able to buy a permit over the counter for bear. So he had a permit, knowing full well that we might have some issues with grizzly, whether that was on a carcass or something like that. But yeah, the first day that we were in there, I had put a stock on a bull that was better than a saddle, and I'd made my way into about 45 yards of this nice bull moose. He was probably a 60-inch bull, and I was planning on trying to take him, and he just suddenly stood up and wheeled and went straight over the ridge from me, and I didn't get a chance to even get a shot at him. And, you know, Steve was below me maybe, I don't know, 100 yards or so, and I motioned for him to come up the hill, and he came up, and we slipped over that saddle to see if we could find that bull moose again. And, you know, of course, I was hunting with my bow, and he had a rifle with him, and we looked up the ridge and actually saw a big grizzly that was kind of working the ridge. And I think what had happened is that bull moose had probably winded the grizzly and scared off, but we had dropped our packs to start this stalk, and the bear was between us and our packs. And so what we decided to do was loop above the bear and try to let it catch our wind and then hopefully spook it off. And and we did. You know, we saw that bear catch our wind, and for whatever reason, I don't know why, but that bear started towards us. And, you know, the closer it got, the quicker it came. And it finally got to a point where it was about 100 yards, and it started charging. And by the time it got to maybe 50 or 60 yards, it was full charge, you know, ears back and running right at us. And, you know, of course, we're screaming and yelling at it. And I would say, you know, of course, you don't want to shoot a bear. We were fortunate, like I said, that Steve had a tag for that bear. But when it got to about, I want to say, maybe 25 yards, it was apparent that that bear was not going to stop, and he shot it.
Well, I mean, you just made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. one of the things that – I point this out, too, that – You were how fast that happens. I've seen them, you know, I've had them bluff charge when I've been fishing up there, but that's bluff charge. But just a young bear, they are so fast. I mean, how fast does it cover ground?
The speed from which it went from 100 yards to the point where he shot it, which I want to say was like about 25 yards, was incredibly quick. I mean, it came so fast. It happened so fast. It was seconds. I mean, it came so quick. You know, I was fortunate in that Steve and I had made the decision. We were going to try to control this situation. And I would tell your listeners the same thing. You want to try to control the situation. So do everything you can to keep that bear in sight. Let it wind you, you know, be noisy, try to scare that bear off, do everything that you can, but control the situation, you know, make sure that you're in control. You know, Steve, when that bear had kind of started showing some interest and started towards us, he actually sat down on the ground, got a rest with his rifle on his knees, had turned his scope power down to 2 power, which I would say was an important factor, because if you've got that scope on 15 or 20 power and a bear's charging, you know, being able to find it in the scope is tough. And at that point, I was standing behind Steve and yelling at it and trying to look big. But, yeah, the amount of time was just mere seconds.
Wow. And you're there, you're bow hunting for moose. Are you carrying yourself, or are you carrying a handgun? You had a 44 or a 450, anything on you?
Yeah, so I had a 40 caliber Glock on my backpack, and like I said, I had dropped my backpack, and I would have never ever done that if I had not had Steve with me with his 300 Ultramag right there behind me. I can tell you that the rest of the hunt, I never went anywhere without my backpack and my Glock 40. but yeah, I mean, it escalated incredibly quickly. You know, and I was fortunate, and Steve handled it like a champ. I mean, he was prepared and as cool as a cucumber.
And we don't have a whole bunch of time to get into it, but I mean, I've heard people who know what they're doing around killing grizzlies or killing brown bear, same thing. That if you shoot like a normal heart shot, which you probably won't be obviously dealing with in a head-on charge, but if you shoot it, that bear can be essentially dead, have heart lung blown out, and still come in there and mess you up or kill you while he's essentially a dead bear running.
Yeah, we actually end up shooting this bear 4 times, if you can believe it,
with
a 300 Ultra. Yeah. Yeah, the first shot, the bear, like I said, he had his head down, running right at us, and he shot him just to the left of his head, I believe, you know, behind the shoulder. That bear, we were lucky in that it turned at that point. He shot it one more time, and then it was actually making its way towards the alder. And, you know, I made the decision, told Steve, hey, don't let that bear make it to the alder, because I don't want to go into that alder patch after a wounded bear.
Preach. So
he actually, yeah. He actually shot it 2 more times to put it down.
I mean, that's – I want people to think about that. I mean, the rounds hitting that from a 300 Ultramag and 4 of them. And so it's just a good thing you have an Alaskan who's used to that kind of stuff with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, extremely big, powerful animals. You know, it was I can tell you in the moment, it was just almost surreal. You couldn't believe that it was happening. And then immediately after, the adrenaline dump was just crazy. I mean, just, you know, shaking. We both had to kind of sit down and collect ourselves. I would say it was intense, you know, and it happens. It's something that you need to think about when you're going to Alaska. It definitely happens. I would also say, you know, don't let that, you know, be a deciding factor in not going. You just have to be, you know, be smart, be prepared, you know, have somebody with a gun, have some form of protection with you, and, you know, don't let it stop you. You can still go up there and do it. And interestingly enough, that was the last bear we saw in 8 days.
Well, good. That's good. When we come back, I want to talk about another one of those giant Alaskan critters, and that is the Alaskan moose, the Yukon moose that had trail go up to Alaska. Wait till you hear about this hunt. And then we'll get into more. Remember, you can go online now, gohunt.com for the insider, get the Alaska information. That's first on the list, but there's a lot more draw. And if you want to go west this coming year in 2020, you better be cracking now. Coming right back. And we're back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward's on assignment. He'll be back soon. Talking with our buddy Trail Kreitzer from GoHunt.com. And talking Alaska right now for a couple reasons. Number one, it's live on the Insider now, Alaska for GoHunt. Planning your trip of a lifetime. They've got that information up. And Trail himself back from a successful moose hunt in an over-the-counter unit. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that have not studied stuff like you have that you just open their eyes that you could actually OTC and go hunt a moose.
Yeah. Buy a permit, even, you know, buy one either online before you go or even show up there in Alaska and visit a sporting goods store that sells licenses and just buy a permit and go hunting.
I guess it's just because it's the biggest, you know, the biggest of the ungulates, and the biggest of the moose there in Alaska. It just seems like it's something that, yeah, I guess I would have failed that question if you said, hey, can you get a over-the-counter tag as a non-resident to go hunt moose? So I think a lot of people are going to take some interest in that. Let's talk about your moose hunt. We had the bear, but let's talk about the moose you hunted and kind of the process of finding that moose.
Sure, yeah, and I would add just on the tail end of what you just said is it's still one of those species up there where you don't have to have a guide. So, you know, not only can you buy a permit and go hunting, you don't have to have a guide. You can do it on your own. So that's worth noting.
We
hunted off of a river, and we ended up camping, like I said, right there off the side of a river. And every day what we were doing was just hiking up into the foothills and hunting them just like you would maybe spot and stalk mule deer. So spending a lot of time glassing and looking. You know, we were there in September, the tail end of September, and they were acting a little bit ruddy. What was really interesting is the number of bulls. We saw quite a few bulls, and it was clear to us that, you know, they were cruising country looking for cows. And so we ended up hunting them, you know, just like you would, you know, mule deer. There's a lot of people that like to call moose. We ended up, like I said, hunting them just like you would a mule deer, mostly spot and stalk.
Yeah, because that's what we see in the, you know, the people down here in the South or whatever who've not gotten to go. We watch the show, and there's a lot of calling, right? There's a lot of calling. Mm-hmm. You said they're acting ruddy. Is September towards the tail of the rut, or is it mid rut? Where does that rut hit for moose?
Yeah, so September is rut time. So I would say prime time is going to be like maybe the 20th through the 30th of September. So the tail end of September there is where those bulls are really starting to rut.
Now I know this question's tough because every area is different and it's site specific. What kind of density? Well, okay, just in the area you were in, what kind of densities? You saw moose. You're looking through different moose to find the bull you want. Do you see two in a trip? Do you see four in a trip? Do you see 12? What do you see?
Yeah, we were fortunate in the area that we hunted. We saw a lot of moose. I would say probably 5 to 10 a day, to be honest.
Wow.
We were seeing cows, calves. We were seeing all kinds of bulls. You know, I would say we probably saw 4 or 5 bulls that I think were probably in that 50 to 65-inch range. So we were fortunate. Yeah, we Steve had done his homework, and we were in an area where the density was quite high, to be honest.
Yeah, that's surprising. I didn't know what to expect, but I thought it was going to be on the lower side. And you mentioned the width on that. So for people knowing, that's another part of this is there's a minimum width, right, for out-of-stater?
It depends on the area that you're hunting.
Okay.
Some areas are any bull, so any legal bull is valid. You can take it and harvest it. And some areas are either, you know, 50 inches or 4 brow times per side. So, some areas do have some restrictions, and some are still just any bull.
Okay, let's talk about the day you kill your bull. How'd that go down?
Yeah, so it was actually kind of an interesting day. Steve had stayed in camp in the morning to flesh out the bear. We wanted to make sure that we got all the fat off the hide, and we got that salted to preserve it because, like I said, we killed that the first day we were there.
Right.
I actually just hiked up on the ridge above camp, which, you know, was not too crazy a hike, maybe a half mile, and ended up sitting there glassing and I looked down north of camp and saw this big bull come working its way through the slough and threw the spotting scope on it, and I knew straight away that this was a bull that I wanted to harvest. I mean, he just had these giant paddles, you know, just everything I ever wanted in Alaskan moose. I thought he was, you know, over 60 wide. He had great big wide paddles, just a no-brainer type of bull. And we had actually agreed, Steve and I, on our way in, you know, I was bow hunting. Steve had a rifle, and, you know, we were coming in. He said, you know, how big does the bull have to be for you to switch over the rifle and take it with the rifle?
Yeah.
And we both agreed, you know, two moose in 10 days is a tall order for two guys. And so we made the agreement that we thought if it was 65 inches plus that we would do whatever it took to get it killed. So, you know, when I saw this bull, I thought he was in that caliber of bull. So I actually took a game bag and threw it on the end of a trekking pole and stuck it in the air to motion Steve down in camp. And he saw me flagging and got his gear together and come running up. And in the meantime, I'd put this bull to bed. And we met up together, you know, glassed the bull and made a stalk on it. It was not too long of a stalk, and I was able to stalk into about 400 yards of this bull. And in the meantime, we actually had another bull, a younger bull, come in from behind us, and he had a couple of cows, and he was grunting, and I thought maybe we'll have the opportunity to have those two bulls kind of come together, and the bigger bull actually got up and started working his way away, and at that point, we decided we had to make a shot, so I switched over to the rifle and, you know, anchored in prone, and I was able to take that bull, but I ended up shooting him, I think, four times. I hit him three out of four times. Two times he was heart shot, and
wow.
still on his feet. And when he finally tipped over and went down, and I can tell you, I mean, everybody will tell you that walking up on an Alaskan bull is something. You know, that they're bigger than you think that they ever could be, but you know they are truly giant animals. They are so big.
I mean, just seeing the pictures of it are impressive without even seeing it like you did, putting your hands on that critter. First of all, I want to back off for a second, though, and say, so in these units, you had a bow, you had it by choice. If you would be able to take it with archery equipment, mm-hmm. you would. But in that unit, somebody from out of state could be rifle hunting. They could take
yep.
a rifle.
Yep, it's an illegal weapon. Yep.
Okay.
So you could hunt with a rifle, yeah, or you could hunt with a bow if you wanted to.
All right. You make that shot. You talk about the distance because that bull was getting up and walking off. How, and once again, I know everything's specific for different critters, but how spooky are moose up there? I mean, are they real spooky? Are they tolerate you? I mean, for a southern hunter, it seems like as we go mm-hmm. further north and west, everything gets way more tolerant of human presence.
Yeah. Yeah. So moose, actually, they don't see real well. They don't have the best eyesight. They have incredible hearing, especially those bulls. They've got those big giant paddles that are essentially work like a satellite dish to funnel all that sound into their ears, right? So that's why they can, you know, you can call to a bull moose and they can hear that for, you know, a mile away. So they have incredible hearing, not the greatest eyesight. You know, they're just like any other ungulate. You know, you got to play the wind, and they will smell you and run off. I will say they're definitely not as switched on as like a mule deer or probably even an elk, but they are more cagey, I would say, than I expected.
Okay.
And man, they can cover ground. I mean, if they are onto you, whether they smell you or maybe, you know, pick you up by sight when you're in close, when they get up and go, they can go. I mean, they've got long legs and man, they can cover ground.
Wow. Okay. So you kill your moose. Then the question is, but how far are you from camp? How far are you from, you mentioned a raft using, I mean, because you're going to want to float this mm-hmm. this meat out. I mean, how far are you away from where that bull drops to where you have somewhere to float meat?
Yeah, so we're, our raft is parked there right next to camp where we have our camp on the bank of the river. And I would say from where my bull went down was about maybe 3/4 of a mile. So not extremely far. It was mostly flat. There was a bunch of slough, so a good portion of it you're walking in water that's maybe up to your calves, and you're kind of slogging your way through. We actually ended up killing another bull. Like I said, my friend Steve, he killed a bull 2 days later after I shot mine.
Whoa.
His bull was, I think, I want to say, just under 2 miles you know, mile and three quarters from camp. The first half mile being a pretty good clip uphill. So it's a lot of work. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it and tell you it was easy. It was a slog fest to try to pack two bulls out.
And y'all understand, Trail's somebody who packs critters out of the mountains and steep mountains like we can only picture. He does that with regularity. So I'm wondering how, under the stress of a critter that, I mean, you know, to us, packing out a mule deer was work for me, let alone an elk. Mm-hmm. I got to think of moose. How much meat do you get off a bull moose up there? I mean, how much are we just talking about? How much is coming out on your back? You told us earlier the antlers from your bull were almost 60 pounds themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I want to say that the bull that I shot was six trips for me and five trips for my friend Steve. So we were 11 total trips for one bull.
Wow.
And that was probably, you know, 70 to, you know, maybe 100-pound pack per load. One thing to consider up there in Alaska is that you are required to pack in, you know, bone in meat. So you can split the quarters to make those a little more manageable, but you are packing bone. You're also packing entire rib cages, so you're cutting the rib cage out and packing that.
So you can't can't cut the meat off. You can't debone it.
Nope, you cannot debone it until you get it back to town. Yep. So we you're packing bone in meat, and it is it's a lot of work. I won't sugarcoat it. I would say, if you're going to go up there and hunt moose, you know, or caribou, any species, really, physical conditioning is important. You're going to need to be willing to pack meat.
Unbelievable. We're going to come back. I want to talk about where they can see pictures, all this going on online. But tell folks, too, once again, deadlines. If somebody wants to be getting in for draws, they're thinking Alaska, 2020 is their Alaska year. What are the dates they need to pay attention to, Trail?
Yeah, December 16th. Yep, coming up. So if you want to hunt in one of those, you know, guided species, whether it's doll sheep or mountain goat or grizzly bear or brown bear, one of those, you'll need to start really thinking about getting a guide or outfitter and thinking about applying December 16th.
Do we build points in Alaska the same way we do in other states?
We don't. It's a random draw. It's completely random.
So the more it's your first year is maybe you have just as much luck as your 25th year.
That's it. Yep. Totally random. You've got six different choices and you can line those out however you think. You can actually even apply for the same hunt six different times, which is going to increase your chances, obviously, because all your name is in for that one hunt. But it's a completely random drawing.
All right, coming right back, and we'll talk more about how you get that information online. And we have just a minute or two left here. I want to get it like a very fast version of all our forthcoming draws, even though we'll have Trail back on the show in the future. We'll talk about some of the earlier draws for out west, not Alaska, but some of the other states out west. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Wrapping it up for this week, talking to our buddy Trail Kreitzer from GoHunt.com and The Insider, now featuring Alaska. But we're going to have many conversations going forward. Trail, first of all, you gave me some numbers, too. I want people to hear this as they think, oh, I'm just a dreamer and I can't do this. You did this trip, Alaskan bull moose, for how much money?
Just shy of $4,000. And you know,
it's amazing.
I had the benefit of being able to use my buddy Steve's boat and his motor. So, you know, you're going to go up from there a little bit if you ended up either renting a boat from, you know, someplace or a raft or something like that. But I would say anywhere in that neighborhood from, you know, maybe $3,500 to $5,000, somewhere in that neighborhood, you could go up and hunt either, you know, moose or caribou or six blacktail.
It is amazing, and I know we'll, on a future show, I know you love the Sitka blacktail. We'll talk about that. Give me a minute encapsulation, if you could. Caribou, opportunities for out-of-staters for caribou in Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some opportunities, and I would say if you want to do that, it's something you ought to start thinking about and going for. You know, there's chances for float trips. There's chances for flying and drop camps. There's still pretty good hunting off the haul road. where you can just drive up and rent a truck and drive out and hunt from the road. So that's still an opportunity. But, yeah, I would say now's the time to look at caribou. Those herds are kind of cyclical. And, you know, we're at a time right now where they're starting to limit those opportunities a little bit. So, you know, look at the chances there are and go hunting.
All right. And people want to check out some of the pictures I've been looking at while we're talking. Where do they find you on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm probably most active on Instagram, so that's just TrailK11. And I am on Facebook, but like I said, I don't use it that often. But yeah, Instagram's typically the best place to find me.
All right, and next time you're on, we've been talking about Alaska in December right now because it's coming up so soon. You said December 16th?
16th, yep.
Okay, but people need to be thinking too, if they're thinking about a Nevada or a, you know, Wyoming or Colorado or Montana. People down here need to think if they want to do that trip, they got to be thinking about that in the next couple of months.
Yeah. Typically the first one out of the gate is elk in Wyoming, which is going to be opening up January 1. From there, you've got Utah and New Mexico or the next couple of states. And then, you know, they come from there, whether that's Colorado or Nevada, they kind of straggle in all the way through May. But yeah, you definitely need to start thinking about elk in Wyoming if that's something you want to pursue.
Yep. And when you go over to gohunt.com, you could figure out what I like about it is you can hear somebody talking about, oh man, it's unit such and such. That's whatever. And you can go on there and you say, well, it's going to take me 12, 14 years to be able to draw that. Or you can go on Go Hunt and say, I want to go hunting and y'all show us units we can draw. I mean, I'm proof of that. I mean, you could point out units you can go draw that have great hunting.
Yeah, general season elk hunting right now in Wyoming. You have to draw that as a non-resident. You can do so in the regular draw with maybe 2 to 3 points, maybe 1.5 to 2 points in the special draw. It's never been better. General season elk hunting and right now in Wyoming is off the charts. I would say if that's something you've kind of wanted and dreamed about, dig in and do the research and go hunting.
I mean, you can. It doesn't have to be something 10 years down the road.
No, you're like I said, maybe 1.5 to 2 years applying for that general season tag in Wyoming. You know, I took a good bull again this year in Wyoming.
Nice bull. I'm looking at the antlers.
Yeah, we actually killed a couple bulls. Chris Neville that works here at Cohunt, I took him out on his first, he killed his first bull, which was a great 6 point. And general season elk hunting right now in Wyoming is maybe as good as it's ever been. So, you know, start applying.
Yeah, we have to get you back on because I want to ask you about your white goat and your speed goat from from this season as well. But we're out of time for this show. Trail Kreitzer, Go Hunt, gohunt.com. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, always a pleasure to be on. I appreciate you having me, Sean.
All right. We'll be back next week. Prep Sports Report next.